Let me turn my timer on.
Oh, awesome.
Okay. Good morning, family. My name is Deb H., and I'm a grateful Al-Anon. I am a work in progress. My higher power has not finished with me. Thank you, Yvonne, for the invite. My home groups are Higher Power Hour Friday, Loomis, California. We meet at 7:30 in the morning. It's a 1-hour meeting. It's hot. It's hot. It's a really good meeting. And my other home group is Parent Serenity, Roseville, California. We meet Monday nights at 7:30 p.m. and it's an hour and a half meeting. And both these meetings are in the Zoom format, so you can just look them up and hop on them if you want to. So let me give you a little background. I, like some other people, did not grow up in an active alcoholism family. I was to learn after I got an Al-Anon and working the steps that both of my parents are adult children, were adult children of alcoholics. My mother's father was a bounder, a womanizer. He didn't help support the family. And my father's father was a violent alcoholic. He beat my grandmother in front of my father. And so at 7 years old, my father got this job, and his job for the family was to go to the bar and get the paycheck before my grandfather drank it. And if he came home and he didn't have the paycheck, then he got the strap. In other words, he got a whipping for not bringing the paycheck home. So that's, you know, how my father grew up. So in my house, in the house that I grew up in, there was no talk of alcohol or alcoholism. If somebody in the family showed up at a function loaded, high, or drunk, or somebody didn't come to a function, they were just referred to as trifling. That was the word they used, was trifling. They never said that they were drunk. I remember there was a time when my Uncle Victor, who was my mother's brother, got to babysit me. I was a little girl, and when I was with him, my job was to go to the icebox and get the beer and bring it to him. So one time I was in the supermarket with my mom, and you know, we're walking along, and I asked her if we're going to stop and go pick up some long necks. That's what they call them in Texas, long necks. And that was the end of my Uncle Victor babysitting me. You see, my uncle was a full-time alky, but nobody ever talked about it, ever. So what happened? You know, how did I get to Al-Anon? Well, our youngest son gave us the ticket to the rooms. My husband and I have a blended family, his, hers, and mine. And when our kids were having kids, we adopted a young boy. He came to us at 3 years old. And we did a public adoption. In California, public adoption means that you get every single paper that the state and the county has on a child. So his file was, I'd say, probably a foot and a half, maybe 2 feet worth of paper, every single document on this kid. So according to some of the records, our youngest son was born high, drunk, and in need of a cigarette. It took them 2 days to detox him in the Children's Hospital in Oakland. And his records also showed that he had been physically and sexually abused before the age of 3. So he had a hard life. When he came to us, I was working at an executive level. I was a pretty high level. And I had a lot, what that translates to is it means I had a lot of discretionary time. And I had a lot of time to spend with him. Now, our other kids, I didn't have time because I was working, right? And all the other kids, I have to tell you, don't have a drinking and drug problem. So it makes you kind of wonder, if I spend more time with you, do you have that problem? If I spend less time with you, maybe you don't. Anyhow, my husband and I had read the records. We didn't know what we were reading. You know, we read that he wasn't placed with his mother's family because all those people were alcoholic. He wasn't placed with his father's family because all those people were alcoholics. You know, if you're not an alcoholic and you're not, you know, familiar with alcoholism, you don't know what you're reading when you're reading it. So our idea was that our environment was going to trump genetics. So when he came to us, he was a little boy. I wrote a script for him. I picked out his clothes. I picked out his friends. I picked out his activities. I picked out his hobbies. At first, he followed the script. Then when he got a little bit older, he started losing pages of the script. And then when he turned about 12 years old, he threw the script back at me. He did exactly what he wanted to do. You see, at 12 years old, somebody in our neighborhood gave him a can of beer. And, you know, I can imagine that when he drank that can, that he was off and running. His body must have said, ooh, I've been missing that. In AA, in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, they would call our youngest son a real alcoholic. He drinks to die. He drinks to blackout. Today, I have to tell you that he's a guest of the state of California down in a prison in Los Angeles. He's doing time for a crime that he did in a blackout. This last crime that he did, he called us and we got that collect call. If you have any experience with corrections, you know you get a collect call from him from the jail. And he said, you know, Mom and Dad, I did something bad. I don't know what I did. I'm waiting on the public defender to come so he can tell me what I did. So can you imagine doing a crime and you have no idea what you did in a blackout? Anyway, that's my son's story about, and let's stop talking about him. Let's talk about me. So I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor, and I have a syndicate of amazing women who I sponsor, and their sponsees sponsor women, and so on and so on. And I use the term syndicate because, you see, all of us are bound by the belief that Al-Anon works. We all have a common belief. So my syndicate does service. We're all very service-oriented people. Growing up, I was told that I had to be smarter than white people, that I had to work harder than white people. So I worked very hard being smarter, faster, and wittier, and so on. And that's, you know, that's the lessons that I got when I was coming up. There's a paradigm operating in me. You see, I am better than you, I'm smarter than you, and at the same time, I'm less than you, all at the same time. And when I came in the rooms, I heard somebody talking about homicide, but they didn't like hearing homicide. When I came in the rooms, my sister Janet calls it, I had homicide and suicide on my mind. Homicide was, I was hurt so badly by watching my younger son drink, that I thought, you know, if I just took him out, then I wouldn't have to be hurt anymore. And the flip side of that was a suicide side. Well, maybe if I took my life, then I no longer have to feel this hurt and pain that I felt watching my younger son drink. So I stepped into my first Al-Anon meeting in Roseville. And Roseville is a suburb of Sacramento. It's primarily a conservative white community. In my first room, I saw a room full of older white people, and they looked like they had come from the country club or off the golf course. The women had their hairs up in updos, and they had those acrylic nails they were flashing, and the men had on those shirts with collars and short sleeves and slacks, and you know, everybody looks so pristine, and I'm looking at them thinking, what are they doing in here, right? And then I started listening to them, and they're putting all, and I want to emphasize all of their dirty laundry out in the street. They were talking about theft. They were talking about incest. They were talking about rape. They were talking about embezzlement. They were talking about domestic violence. They were talking about elder abuse. What I didn't tell you is that my mother came from the South, and I grew up with Southern manners. And in the South, you do not put your family business out in the street like that. And so I was appalled at these people. Like, why are they talking about all this stuff like this? And then I was thinking, well, they must not know that I'm in the room because I'm hearing all of it, right? So I was kind of shocked by that first meeting. And I have to tell you that after the meeting was over, I somehow felt better. I didn't know why, but I felt better. And I decided I was going to come back to the meeting. Now, I got to tell you, I didn't come to Al-Anon because it was a good idea. I came to Al-Anon because our health provider ordered that in order for them to treat our son for alcoholism, my husband and I had to attend at least 2 Al-Anon meetings a week. And they gave us a little white card to be signed. And so I took my white card and I took my husband's white card because my husband said, I'm not going to any kind of meeting. I know how to be a parent. I'm not doing this. I took his card and I got the card signed. That's why I came to Al-Anon. And after I started coming to Al-Anon after a while, I wasn't walking towards the light. I was running from the fire. My biscuits were on fire. You know, Yosemite Sam says, my biscuits were on fire. My biscuits were on fire. That's why I was in Al-Anon. I was desperate. So, you know, I don't know if you know what it looks like from a newcomer's point of view. Newcomer, you come in and you hear people talking about they've been in the program 10 years. They've been in the program 15 years. They've been in the program 20 years. And you look up on the wall and there's the 12 steps and there's the 12 traditions. And you think to yourself, well, how hard is the 12 traditions and 12 steps? What's wrong with these people? Are they developmentally delayed? Are they retarded? Why is it going to take you 10 years to read those two things? I can read the 12 steps and the 12 traditions in about 15 minutes. You know, I don't get it. So what's so hard about that? I knew that I had to get the heck out of that meeting once I got that memo on how to stop my son from drinking. And I kept looking for that memo on the literature table. I never did find it. You know, one of the other things that really scared me off was at the end, you know how they end those meetings, everybody's holding hands, that kumbaya moment, and they start swaying, and they say the serenity prayer or one of those prayers, and then they say, keep coming back, keep coming back. Ooh, that's scary if you're new. If you're new. But you got to think about me coming in the rooms. When I first came in, I sat in the back like newcomers do. And I sat next to this really tall guy who looked Scandinavian looking. And at that time, I wore dreadlocks. And he looks at me and he says, you know, you look like Whoopi Goldberg. And I looked at him and I said, I know you mean to give me a compliment, but that's not a compliment. Because I don't think that she looks good. And I don't know if I care about her. So I, you know, okay, I told him off. Next time I come in the meeting, I sit with him. Next time I come in the meeting, I sit with him. And each time I sit with him, he says the very same thing about Whoopi Goldberg. Now, what does that say about me? I think about this now, like, why didn't I get up and sit next to somebody else? No, I kept sitting next to somebody that kept insulting me. I think he meant to, you know, maybe say nice things, but that's what it was every week. So I am that person. I do suffer from terminal uniqueness. I didn't see myself in that meeting. I couldn't identify with anything that was going on. I'm going to read to you from Courage to Change about what it felt like. Okay, this is on page 331, this book, and it says, feeling that I don't belong has been a problem all my life. This was especially true when I first came to Al-Anon. My attending seemed wrong because there was no alcohol in my household as a child. It was my grandparents who drank. At that first meeting, I learned that alcoholism is a family disease. It affects not only the person who drinks, but those who care about him or her. Indeed, the effects of this disease are often passed down from one generation to another, genetics. When I heard a description of some of these effects, I recognized a profile of myself. For the first time in my life, I was with people who knew what I was going through. Today, I see clearly that I have, in fact, been affected by the family disease of alcoholism. Al-Anon offers me a way to do my part in breaking this family pattern. I can get off the merry-go-round by choosing recovery. Today's reminder, in Al-Anon, I find people who understand as few others can. If I have been affected by the drinking of another, I need not doubt that I belong. No matter what difficulty, no matter how unique we may feel, Somewhere nearby are men and women with similar stories who have found help, comfort, and hope through the recovery in Al-Anon. That pretty much describes what it feels like when you look like me coming in Al-Anon. So I didn't hear my story until one night there was a woman that was chairing, a Mexican woman. I call her Mexican and not Latino because she says she's Mexican. So she was sharing her experience, strength, and hope. And she had a daughter, not a son like me, but a daughter. And her daughter paid for her alcohol and drugs by selling herself. Well, her daughter got pregnant. And this woman identified as a strong Catholic. And she said that she prayed for a miscarriage. And her daughter miscarried. And so she was left feeling guilty and at the same time relieved. And when I heard all those feelings that she had, I heard my story. And I knew that night when I saw that little brown lady sitting up there that I belonged there. And I stayed. So when it came time to get a sponsor, I didn't even doubt that I needed a sponsor because I told you I was desperate. So when it came time to get a sponsor, me, I picked an Al-Anon rock star. She was a person in our area that a lot of people asked to speak. She's, you know, recognized as a person that works a good program. Well, the problem was this. She worked in Yolo County. She worked in San Joaquin County. She lived in Yolo County. I lived in Sacramento County. So we were not close geographically. And, you know, she did a really good job with me, but she couldn't give me the time that I needed. I was desperate and I needed to work the steps. So I met with her one day and said, you know, I don't think you can give me the time. And I thank her because she explained to me in Al-Anon that when you're meeting with somebody and you need more, it's time to go find somebody that can give you what you need. And that Al-Anon, unlike the outside world, that leaving one sponsor and going to another sponsor is a good thing. And she told me that we would always be good friends, and we are good friends. So this time I had some more Al-Anon under my belt, and I figured out that I don't need to pick my sponsor. I need to see who God or my higher power puts in front of me. So there was a lady in the meeting, and I really liked what I heard. You know, I liked her recovery. I liked her truth. And so I approached her. She's the one that my higher power chose for me. And I asked her, and she said, you know, I'm sponsoring a lot of girls, yeah, but I got a girl that's not working. So let me get a hold of her and let me get back with you. She called me the next day and she said, I'm dropping a sponsee and I'm going to pick you up. And that's the woman that sponsors me today. And I love her dearly. I feel like she's an important person in my family. She comes to our house. Pre-COVID, she used to come to our house every Thanksgiving to have Thanksgiving dinner with my family. She knows my whole family, my brothers, my kids, everything. I just dearly love her. She's the one that has the flashlight. She's the one that walked me through the steps, the traditions, and we walked down that spiritual path with her and her flashlight. So I became a true Al-Anon, but she's very service oriented. So she told me that if I wanted to stay with her, I had to do service. So I was a secretary, I was a treasurer, I was a literature person. And what happened after a period of time is we had a GR. And here's what the GR reported on when she came back from assembly. She would tell us about the hotel she stayed in and what her room was like. And then she told us about lunch and she told us about dinner. And I'm sitting up there. Now, remember, I told you I'm at executive level and I'm thinking, well, I have never sent anybody on to a conference or anything, and they come back telling me about the hotel room, right? And lunch. So I thought, wow, this chick doesn't get it. So I called her one day to ask her a question. And she said, I said, hi, this is Deb. And then I said, oh, Debbie. And she said, Debbie. Oh, you're the color Debbie. Blam. Right there, I said, uh-oh, I'm gonna have to show her what color Debbie can do. So I ran for GR. And I became the GR, not for the right reasons, but I had to show her what colored Debbie can do. So I became a GR and I liked it. I learned a lot more about Al-Anon. And then I became a DR and I liked being DR too, because I learned about Al-Anon the program and Al-Anon the business. It was really good for me. That's when I ran into, first time I saw Yvonne was as a DR. I fully embraced this program. Did I experience some racism? Yes, I did. You know, I mean, I'd be asked to speak at some meetings, and I go up in the hills of Northern California, and, you know, in the kumbaya moment, I'd have people that didn't want to hold my hand. Well, that was fine with me because I don't know where the hands have been. You know, I hold somebody else's hand. Okay. It's nothing to me. And, as a DR, you know, I can remember going someplace with other DRs and we would be carpooling. And there was one DR that didn't like to have Black people in her car. She had a little Mustang. She didn't have a real car. You know what I mean? So I just kind of like shook my head and went on. And when I was DR, there was only one other DR of color, and that was a DR from San Francisco. So we hung out together, but I hung out with the other DRs too, because people were lovely to me. Yeah, there were some slights, like the year that we sponsored assembly. All of our assemblies were down in the Bay Area, and I decided to take them up to Northern California, Tahoe. It's a resort area. And we got a good deal on a hotel and stuff. And, you know, the Bay Area white people did not like that. So I took them up there, and we had a wonderful assembly. People still talk about it. But the payback was that the area would not pay for my hospitality room. So we had to hand out goodies and paper bags, but people still loved it. I didn't care, you know, I didn't care. So I run into slights, like the slights that you would run into outside the rooms. But I'm at a place in my life where you can't really do anything to me that's going to hurt me. I just figure that. And Al-Anon, we have a lot of people, and a lot of people aren't well and wonderful, and that they need work, right? So I did get involved in institutions, and institutions is my service love. And I'll tell you why, because when you do institutions, you see a whole lot more people that look like me. In institutions, I met with Black, Brown, Vietnamese, Chinese, Japanese, Syrian, Somalian, Honduran, El Salvador, Cuban inmates. Okay. We ran meetings for almost 9 years pre-COVID. We had over 140 plus inmates. We had 6 meetings for the men and 1 meeting for the women. So we were setting the world on fire. And the reason why I like institutional work so much is because the people that come in the meetings get serious. You know, I have never been in a regular Al-Anon meeting where our literature is underlined and highlighted and, you know, and people quote from the book when they're talking. But that's what you get when you do institutions. I did Folsom State Prison, and I did the Folsom Women's Facility, and it was like 900 women in there. The interesting thing about doing institutions with the women was that we would run across Alateens. There were Alateens that were in prison, and they knew the literature and they knew the program. And that was like a real wonderful thing, you know, to see it 180, to see the program come 180. I'm very protective about the institutional work because, you know, I've heard it referred to as part-time meetings. They're not part-time meetings. When you have 6 meetings and you have guys that you work with for 9 years because they're lifers, that is not a part-time meeting, right? That's full-time. So those meetings need to be classified by WSO as meetings, not part-time meetings. And I always felt, you know, I hear Al-Anon talking a lot about diversity, and I feel that institutional work is a missed opportunity for Al-Anon because it's there that we meet all kinds of people, all walks of life. You know, one of our meetings, we had a guy that was a physician that had committed murder. You know, we had other professionals in there. And then we had guys that were just regular guys. 90% of the inmates are adult children of alcoholics. 90%. So, you know, we could have those adult children meetings in there, but we don't. We just have straight up Al-Anon. And so what happens when a lot of those people come out is they want to go to Al-Anon meetings on the outside. I never did disclose to them that if you go to a meeting on the outside, you might walk into a room of white women. Don't be afraid. I never said that. They never asked me, and I didn't say that. But I know that some other institutional meetings in California had inmates come out, and the inmates started their own Al-Anon meetings on the outside. So you see, this is a really important service work in terms of Al-Anon talking about diversity. So right now they did elections in our area and locally, and they were having trouble trying to fill the diversity coordinator position. And it kind of, I don't know, it kind of bothers me because I'm like, well, what kind of work are you going to do? What, you know, what's your plan? And they talk a lot about outreach. Now, outreach to me means let me bring you to me so that you can do the things the way I do, which is very patronizing. Very patronizing. How about talking about inreach? Like, well, why don't we partner together? Let's see what resources you have, and let's see what we can do in your community. You know, we don't have anything to show anybody because it's attraction, not promotion. But we do have the ability to partner with other groups to bring them into the Al-Anon tent. If Al-Anon's sense is serious about diversity, then I think we have to look for more brown, black, Asian Pacific, First Nation people to become delegates. Maddie reported there's only two delegates of color. We need much, much more, because you know what? When people are coming from different cultures and different places, they have a sense of what is needed to move to a more diverse organization. You know, we need more than two voices speaking up for us. We need more than two voices strategizing on how we can get there. And I feel real strongly about what they call diversity, because I know I live in a diverse state, California. But I know that we are richer when we are diverse. I felt the richness in the institutional work. So that's what I'm, you know, that's how strong I feel. Now, I haven't talked a very, very much about my family. I am blessed in that my husband's in Al-Anon. My husband did not come through AA. My husband's a straight up Al-Anon. The only thing is, and we talk the language of love, but the only thing is when we get in an argument, you know, he could say things like, well, you may be right. Well, I know what that means. I know what he's really saying. So that's the downside to being with somebody in Al-Anon. But I'm lucky in that he views things like I do, you know, from a spiritual point of view. I love Al-Anon. Al-Anon has given me a life. It's taught me to love me. It's taught me not to be busy. My name, Deborah, translates in Hebrew to bee. So I've been like a bumblebee, moving constantly, always doing something. And I'm learning to slow down. I'm learning to appreciate me. That's also a positive thing about COVID, is I've had more time to spend with me and enjoy me. I have not been as active as I used to be in Al-Anon. I'm 71. I've been in Al-Anon about 18 years. It's time for the new breed to move up. I can assist them. I can help them. But I no longer have to be, you know, the alpha dog. I don't have to be the leader of the pack. I'm comfortable being in the middle. And, you know, that's what Al-Anon means. Al-Anon means a lot. And yes, we do have common issues. We do have common problems. I know that any of you that have children that are alcoholic, that you have felt what I felt. I know that any of you that grew up in a home where perfection was prized, where my dad was in the military, so following rules was number one, and then perfection, And then if you don't do something right, you just keep doing it, doing it, and doing it until you get it right. All that works against human nature. I know today that I'm okay, that I'm all right. Maybe I didn't do things for the right reason, but I got there. My higher power wanted me to be there, just like he wants me to be there today. Let me see how much time I have left here. I get nervous when I do these talks. Oh, I got 14 minutes. And I get nervous when you do these talks because I always think that you're going to judge me. Well, you might not be judging me tomorrow, but I bet you judge me. I bet you judge me next week. You'd be talking about that woman from California. But I am who I am. I'm okay. You know, I'm okay. So I know you want me to go to 45, Yvonne, but I'm going to quit now because if I start talking anymore, I'm going to start telling stories about people and that might not be appropriate. So thank you. No, I might name them. So thank you very much. And I'm honored to be here with all of you today. And I hope that you got something from what I said. If you didn't, then hang on. There's some terrific speakers following me. Bye.